Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Got a really fine guest with us this evening. Name is Regis Tremblau, and he's a filmmaker out of Woolwich, Maine. Welcome to our program, Regis.
Oh, well, thank you, George. I'm happy to be with you.
Now, I've looked over your titles. Now, you're on a tour right now, and what the subject tonight is your latest film, 30 Seconds to Midnight. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I'm on my second cross country tour with this film.
Oh my gosh, how's it coming? Okay, Regis.
Oh, really terrific. The audiences have been very, very receptive. It's going over very, very well.
Yeah, I've listened to you several times, and then I actually watched your film last night in the entirety. And you've done a marvelous job at explaining the real problems that face the world out there.
Well, thank you. I became very concerned about three issues that threaten life on the planet, and they're the only three issues that is facing threatening life on the planet, and that's nuclear war, nuclear power, and climate change. And I placed those three issues in the historical context from the discovery of this country in 1492 when Columbus first came here to the present day. And it's a history of genocide, it's a history of stealing resources, and a history of violence that continues today.
Yes, I must agree with you that there's been a lot of imperialism under the guise of trying to help international countries overseas. Is that not sort of the premise at times?
Well, I agree. I think the history of the United States, certainly since 1798, the United States has invaded militarily over 500 countries all over the world. And that imperialism and military march continues today, and it's very, very extensive. As I document in the film, the United States has over 800 military bases in close to 100 countries all over the world, including bases surrounding Russia and China. And these actions are very, very provocative, especially since Russia and China are both nuclear-armed countries. And I wouldn't want to forget North Korea, that is now nuclear-capable, and the United States is threatening North Korea on a daily basis and have been for many, many years.
Right. Your title, 30 Seconds to Midnight, is what? Based upon the Doomsday Clock? Is that right?
Well, that's right. A lot of people will be familiar with the Doomsday Clock. In fact, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, who created this metaphor of a Doomsday Clock, until just recently had the clock at 3 minutes to midnight. And they just changed it and moved it 30 seconds closer to midnight to 2.5 minutes. And I thought they were being very conservative because the threats of nuclear war are more serious now than they were during the Cold War. And most people are unaware how serious nuclear power is with, events like Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and Fukushima that are polluting the oceans and the environment. And the nations of the world aren't paying very much attention to climate change. And the president basically is a climate denier and is threatening now to pull the United States out of the Paris Accord of last year.
Right.
So I really think if nuclear power and nuclear war doesn't end life on the planet, then if nothing is done to mitigate climate change, then Mother Nature will finish the job.
You have on there Helen Caldicott. Now, isn't she a leader in the anti-nuclear movement over, what, decades? Tell us a little bit about, and you really got to meet her on a personal one-to-one basis, did you not?
Well, yes, I did. Last summer, Dr. Caldicott is an Australian physician trained and taught at the Harvard School of Medicine. And from her early, and she is close to 80 now, and she is considered probably the leading expert and activist against the use of nuclear power since she was very, very young, right out of medical school. And she was one of the first people to actually begin studying the biological effects of radiation on human biology, plant and animal biology. And she's written many books. She's just completed another book. And she's not very optimistic that as a human species, we'll survive. In fact, she says in the film, I wonder if humanity is an evolutionary aberration designed in an evolutionary sense not to survive.
Right.
And, yeah, so that's a very chilling and shocking assessment of where someone like Dr. Caldicott believes we are as a species.
What was your own evolution from childhood until adulthood today over the years? Was there any particular experiences or any, you know, very poignant type of moments in your life that motivated you to start doing this filmmaking? Tell us about that.
Well, when I was 10 years old, my parents gave me a Kodak Brownie camera for Christmas, and I was fascinated with photography, and my mother taught me to type on a Smith Corona manual typewriter when I was in eighth grade, and I began writing stories and taking pictures, and that continued through high school and college and beyond. And in the 1970s, mid-70s, I taught journalism and photojournalism in high school. And when video became available, I realized that I needed to transition to video because it's the most powerful communications tool known to the human race. And I actually didn't really become radicalized until 10 or 12 years ago when I started documenting a number of environmental concerns in the state of Maine where I live. And then I had the opportunity to go to Jeju Island in South Korea in 2012, where I documented the massacre of as many as 60,000 peasants who had risen up against the United States military occupation of South Korea after the war. And this massacre happened at the hands of the United States military that was threatened by this uprising, and they labeled them communist sympathizers and therefore basically just eliminated them. And I made that documentary, and it was the first documentary that revealed these atrocities at the hands of the United States military. And since that time, it's been translated into seven languages by volunteers all over the world, and thousands of people have seen it. And that basically was the beginning of me documenting the effects of the United States militarism and presence starting in the Pacific and examining the consequences on the people, the culture, and the environment. And that led me to make 30 Seconds to Midnight, which took me back down through the Pacific from Hawaii to Japan, Okinawa, Korea, and the Marshall Islands. And then just last year, I traveled to Odessa in Ukraine and to Russia for 3 weeks.
Right. I noticed that you were standing in Kremlin there, I mean, in the Moscow Square, and you said you really met some fine Russian people over there, did you not?
Well, yeah, I met many Russians, and just briefly, they're just like us. They love their families. They love their children. They want peace with everybody, and they simply want to live in peace and safety and provide for their children in a secure environment. They like Americans. They've been always interested in American culture, American people, our music, our literature. They know more about our literature and our culture and our history than most Americans do. And I was just welcomed with open arms, and really, it was an incredible experience. They're just wonderful people, and it was easy to fall in love with them. And, you know, a lot of Americans are still under the impression that it's the old Soviet Union under Stalin and Khrushchev, where you can't go anywhere on your own. You're followed by special agents of the state. And that was not the case. I was free to go anywhere I wanted to talk with whoever I wanted, and that included members of the Russian Communist Party. So, Americans really need to get to know Russians, and we've got to somehow overcome this Russia phobia and demonizing all things Russian and President Putin, because all of that is a Western American fabrication.
It's this propaganda machine worldwide that keeps us all divided, it seems like. What do you think?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. And as long as the ruling elites, these global ruling parties, can keep us divided over dozens and dozens of issues, everything from immigration to Black Lives Matter to oil to renewables, you name it, we're divided, and therefore they're able to continue with their really insidious plan to dominate the globe and to use the United States military to enforce their will.
You know, you touched on your experiences in Russia. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, he was the author of Gulag Archipelago, but also he had a saying that I like, and it went like this. It went, the battle line between good and evil runs through every human heart.
And yeah,
to me, it's an individual thing, too. We must continue in our missions and fighting against the wrong and the evil, but also the problem within us is what we must battle every day.
Well, I would tend to agree with you. You know, there are different interpretations. I mean,
right.
Christianity would describe that as original sin. Others would describe it as a constant struggle and battle between good and evil, right and wrong.
Right.
But it seems to be something in human nature that has been there maybe since the beginning.
Well, you know, what you just commented about what Helen Caldicott had said, we could almost tie that thought back to her in a way. And in this sense, this is sort of some of my own thoughts, is that we have certain matter operates with certain laws, right?
Right.
And the matter and amino acids and all, they have, they're governed by these laws out there. So we're engineered to a certain degree and tied to those laws, are we not?
Well, I think so, and I think those and those customs and mores develop in different societies, and they develop differently. And so I think we are very much conditioned.
So we've been conditioned and we have this engineering built into us. So it seems like to me that this human nature problem embedded in whatever culture it might be, gives rise to transgressions against one another, see? And out of that comes hate and resentment and just division. That's what I see.
Right. I prefer to see myself as a citizen of the world and the cosmos, and to try to get away from boundaries of all kinds and to get away from nationalism and patriotism that I think more often are destructive than helpful.
Yeah. You went to the Marshall Islands. Is that where they conducted a lot of testing after World War II? Is that right?
Well, that's exactly right. I went down to the Marshall Islands 2 years ago on my second trip through the Pacific, and from 1946 to 1958, the United States conducted 67 atomic tests in the Marshall Islands, and many of the atolls, the islands in the Marshallese territory, have been contaminated and are contaminated to this day, and people have not been able to return to their home atolls where they've lived for thousands of years, and the effect on the people has been horrific. I mean, they've suffered all of the known physical and medical effects of radiation on the human body, from cancers to hair loss to thyroid problems. They've skin burns from the radioactive fallout. And some people like to say that those tests were the equivalent of 1.5 Hiroshima bombs going off every day in the Marshall Islands since 1946.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And, of course, the United States kept all of this very secret, and the Marshallese have been trying to get reparations for the damage that was done to them and to their island, and that's really just been stalled in Congress. So these people have suffered terribly, and they live, most of them, in really abject poverty. Their food supply has been contaminated by the radiation. Prior to 1950 or 1946, when the atomic test took place, they were almost completely on a subsistence diet. They ate from the sea, and they ate coconuts, and they ate from the land, whatever they grew. And because everything was poisoned by radioactive material, everything they eat now is imported. It comes in on ships. They often have food shortages. But, you can't eat the fish from the sea. You can't eat any of the coconuts or anything they would grow on the land because it's contaminated and will be till the end of time. So it's really a terrible thing that's happened at the hands of the United States military and government to conduct those tests that have affected us all. And what a lot of people don't realize is they think, well, the Marshall Islands is 6,000-7,000 miles away. But all of those tests gave off huge radioactive clouds that went up into the stratosphere, and they've been circling the globe ever since. And it's really even more shocking to realize that the other countries that have nuclear weapons, so that's England, France, China, Russia, India, Pakistan, and Israel, including the United States, have tested over 2,000 nuclear tests, atomic weapons, all over the globe. The English tested theirs in Australia, the French in French Polynesia in the Pacific, Russia and China in their far remote territories. And so, you know, we've been polluting the entire globe, contaminating the entire globe with all of this radioactive material. And then you have, nuclear disasters that happened in Chernobyl. Three Mile Island and now Fukushima, and Fukushima continues to spread that radioactive material into the Pacific and the environment. So the entire human family has been contaminated by radioactivity, and that accounts for the astronomical rise in the rate of cancer since 1946 and all these nuclear tests that have been taking place.
Do you and think... Go ahead, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, this is what Dr. Helen Callicott has been trying to tell people, you know, for the last 35, 40 years.
Right. Do you think, and I've talked to her, I've interviewed her before, and do you think that the Fukushima is a kill event for the world or not?
Oh, I absolutely do. The Pacific is pretty much dead. You're really not very cautious and careful if you eat any kind of fish that comes out of the Pacific. In fact, they're finding fish with high levels of radiation. They're finding the sea creatures that have abnormalities. You know, they're like birth defects. Whales and other sea life are washing up on the shores dead. And this radioactive material is continuing to spread not only throughout the Pacific, but it'll eventually spread to all of the oceans and seas in the world. And so this very well could be the final destruction.
Right. There's a fellow by the name of Dana Dunford up out of British Columbia that went on a research. He had an inflatable boat, and he's in a wheelchair. Because he had the bends, he had an injury. He was a deep sea diver. And anyway, he went and did an extensive survey all up and down the last few years and shows that the sea life in many of these lagoons is dead, is devoid of the normal level of sea life. In these, at low tide, he went in and did photographic, evidence, of that.
Well, there are a number of studies, reputable sources indicate the very thing that you're talking about, and not only in the Pacific, but also in many of our lakes, rivers, and streams right here in the United States that are polluted, and fish and animal life are dying because of it.
Yeah, it's disrupting the food chain, is it? Is it not? And the cesium-137 is out there everywhere. They're finding.
That's right. And in my film, there's one of the three portions of the film that feature Dr. Caldicott. She says that this radioactivity is in every stage of the food chain and concentrates most highly in us at the top of the food chain. And that does not bode well for our future as a species. What Helen points out is that the effects of radioactivity on the human body, the human species, are not imminent, but they're more long-term. And over the course of decades and centuries, if we live that long, she says that our human genome will be changed in such a way that we're going to see an increase in all kinds of abnormalities and over 2,000 diseases, known diseases, that affect the human body. So it's not a very pleasant proposition to consider.
No, it sort of fits into the eugenics movement, does it not, to that plan?
Well, we could talk about eugenics probably on another occasion, but I do think there are powerful forces that would like to see lots of the population on the earth, which is approaching 7 or 8, 9 billion now, they'd like to see it eliminated. But whether or not eugenics is a plan from the United Nations or from global elites, Apart from that, what we've been doing to ourselves through the use of nuclear power and avoiding the short and long-term effects of climate change, both of those are very likely threatened human existence on this planet.
You've done some very, very well said. You've done some other interviews with Ray McGovern. He's very insightful, is he not?
Well, yeah, and for people who don't know who Ray McGovern is, he's a retired CIA analyst of 27 years whose primary focus was analyzing information coming out of the Soviet Union and Russia. So he's one of the most informed people in the world in terms of analyzing all things Russian and President Putin. And he's become a good friend. I spent 2 days interviewing him in Washington, D.C. last year. And, he's speaking out. He hasn't been persecuted or prosecuted by the government, but he's basically a whistleblower, and he's revealing a great deal about the CIA and the misinformation that they continue to put out that is creating some real serious tensions between the United States and Russia. And he speaks on a daily basis. He's interviewed almost on a daily basis by news outlets, alternative sources all over the world, trying to dispel this Russophobia and the demonization of Putin. He's an incredibly intelligent man, and he's been traveling all over the world trying to share his knowledge and information to put people straight.
Brzezinski just passed away recently, and I think he was an advocate of a very strong stance against Russia. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. He hated Russia, and he was brought up hating Russia. I think Brzezinski probably has done it to more harm than anybody alive to continue the demonization of all things Russia. And it's just been a terrible distortion. His plan and the acknowledged and accepted strategy of the United States has been to take down Russia, to break it up, balkanize it, and steal the incredible natural resources that Russia owns. And I think that's the reason behind the provocations against Russia. And that's why we've surrounded Russia and continue to threaten them and demonize them, hoping that the United States can bring Russia to their knees at the altar of U.S. imperialism and militarism, and then go in and break the country up and take the resources, as the United States has done since the beginning, but most recently throughout the Middle East, Afghanistan, Libya, Africa. I mean, it's happening on a huge, huge scale as we speak.
Right. I noticed in your film, you no one was sacred. You went after the Democrats and the Republicans, right? In mistakes and their aggressions that they've committed over the years. What do you think?
Well, I think Democrat and Republican are two sides of the same coin.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe that these global elite forces, money, have orchestrated a silent coup in this country, and they've taken over all levels of our government, from Congress to the presidency to the courts. We no longer can really consider this to be our government because it does not represent us. It represents big money and powerful forces that are unseen. And so I refuse to get involved in arguments about left and right, conservative and liberal, Democrat and Republican. I think those are all just distractions because I do believe that the system has been corrupted and I no longer participate in elections because I'm convinced, thoroughly convinced they're all rigged. And after this past election, it should be really clear to a lot more Americans that they don't have a voice. In fact, when I was in Russia, I would ask people, well, what do you think about the American election? And I was there. I came home 1 week before the election. And some people in Russia would say, well, we're not even paying attention. We don't care. That's your business. Others were very, very much informed. And one person really represented what a lot of them felt. He said, you Americans must be really embarrassed by what's going on in your country. You're being forced to choose between two evils. Nobody seems to like either one. And he said, I think that Americans appear to be really disillusioned with their government and with their democracy. And, you know, I had to agree because I feel the same way.
You know, Regis, we've all been conditioned to certain ways of thinking and worldviews, see? And sometimes those will continue to divide us, but it's hard to get down to the truth sometimes, is it not?
Well, you're exactly right. It's always difficult to really get down to the truth.
Yeah.
And what I have tried to point out in the film, there's a root cause to all of this. The root cause of the militarism, the advance of empire, corporatism, the TPP, NAFTA, all of that, the root of all of that is capitalism. It's greed, and it's based on acquiring more and more capital at the expense of people and at the expense of the profit, the planet, I'm sorry. And capitalism and money don't see boundaries, don't see borders. The goal is to continue to develop, get people to consume. And this is all at the expense of life on the planet. And they've got us right on the brink of extinction because of the exploitation of the planet. They continue to destroy the planet, the ecosystem, extracting more and more finite resources that they need to fuel their capitalist domination.
Yeah, it seems to work pretty good, capitalism, on small businesses, but what's happened, it seems like to me, is crony capitalism has evolved and it dominant, and the monopoly of money and credit creation is really the root cause that I see, you know, when you're talking about capitalism.
Capitalism is the root of all the problems that we have today, regardless of how you want to describe it. I mean, people describe it as predator capitalism. Others like to say, well, controlled, and when it's regulated, it's okay. But it's always based on profit, and it's based on greed, which is appealing to the worst parts of who we are as human beings. And, you know, I refuse to say that communism or socialism are the answers.
Yeah.
Those systems have all shown that they have weaknesses and problems.
There have been millions virtually killed by communistic collective states. That's true.
Yeah.
My
feeling is I would love to see, if not a system, but an awareness that we're all citizens of the planet. We're all human beings. If we could strip away the things that divide us, everything from race to religion to national origin, and see ourselves as caretakers and brothers and sisters on this very tiny, finite planet that we live on, and if we could find ways to live in peace and harmony, whatever that system or reality would be, is I would like to be a part of that. In fact,
Yeah, it seems like something along the lines of a credit union type of financial system would be more to a solution-based system that I would think of. What do you think?
Yeah.
In other words, something, if there's a monopoly of credit creation now, if you take that and distribute it out to everybody along the lines of some kind of a credit union type system, that might be more fair, seems like.
Well, anything that would be fair, even if it weren't perfect, would be worth doing.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's sort of my own thinking. But, anyway, getting back to, your film, there's been some accidents at Hanford. And this, boy, this illustrates the dangers that we are facing. Do they not?
Well, yes, they do. And, I still don't think enough people are paying attention to what happened recently at Hanford. But, if Hanford were actually to, result in a catastrophic meltdown or exposure of all the radioactive material that's kept there, there are scientists that are claiming that that would be worse than a Fukushima on mainland USA. And, you know, we have some 65 commercial nuclear power plants in the United States all needing to store highly radioactive material that have a shelf life of 10,000 years. And the EPA and the Associated Press have done a study, and it's been reported by the Associated Press, that three-quarters of our nuclear power plants are leaking now and cannot be stopped, and that the radioactivity is leaking into the ecosystem, the groundwater, lakes and the ocean, wherever they're located, and that's, you know, a continued threat to life on the planet.
Right. The Gundersons have documented that these older plants have problems because the metal and everything else over long decades becomes very brittle, and I think that's what continues this leakage problem. What do you think?
Yeah, and Helen Caldicott says in the film, there is nothing that can contain this radioactive material for more than 100 years. The steel, cement, titanium, concrete, whatever, that none of them can contain that for more than 100 years.
Right. Do you see anything breakthrough that could help nullify or neutralize or remediate radioactive material?
I don't, but I've heard and read some reports that scientists have discovered something that can somehow neutralize it. But my answer to that is, if that's true, you better hurry up.
Right. I've broached this with other scientists, or not with other scientists, but with scientists, and they seem to think that we might possibly have the technology, but it would be super secret, see, and that's why maybe it won't be used.
Yeah, well, probably.
Because it could neutralize a nose cone, a nuclear attack. So it could take out a nuclear attack if that were the case.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there's military technology that we have, but I just don't think it's going to be applied to the Fukushima. Now, the Fukushima has plutonium stored there on that site. And if another earthquake occurs close by, it could devastate that site. And if it's drifting over Tokyo, it could just take out Tokyo. That's a real danger there, it seems like.
I happen to be inclined to believe some of the reports that was not an earthquake that created the tsunami at Fukushima.
Yeah.
But a deliberate atomic explosion under the sea that caused that, and I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case.
Yeah, I've heard that. Now, Chris Hedges, how does he enter into any of your interviews or this movie, or how does Chris Hedges?
Yeah, well, Chris has an important role in the film at the very end. I interviewed him 2 years ago, and So I was asking Chris, what's the solution? And Chris Hedges has been speaking publicly to all kinds of gatherings. He's been writing continuously. And what he claims is the only way to overcome these dark forces of capital, which are global, is through massive worldwide nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. And he claims that that's the only thing that can take down this system that has us on the brink of extinction. And so he makes that very, very clear at the end of my film. I think I have to agree with him. He likens what he's talking about to these massive uprisings around the world with Arab Spring, the massive protests in Spain, Greece, Italy, and South Korea, where millions and millions of people have risen up over a sustained period of time to either topple governments or to express their resistance to the illegitimate governments and illegitimate authority that are causing so much austerity. And that's basically Chris Hedges' point.
So you know, this corruption is becoming easier to see by the public, is it not?
Well, I think so. I think with shows like yours and others are doing a lot to pull back the veil of secrecy, and more people, I think, are becoming aware. It just can't happen fast enough, in my opinion.
Yeah, the technology, the handheld devices, the smartphones, and all these other devices, people are communicating directly outside of official, you know, our media, communications, and that's why they're getting the word quick. What do you think?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. The problem with, social media and Facebook is that these forces have infiltrated, and there are provocateurs and people, trolls, who are pretending to be friends and others just go about provoking and creating more division and more anger and causing people to waste a whole lot of time responding to it. So people have to be very careful about where they get their information, because there's so much propaganda and disinformation that's out there on the internet. So while the internet and social media has really given us a great opportunity to share information with people, it's also provided just the opposite for the spread of false news, you know, and propaganda.
Yeah, I've been looking at, been on the web since it began. I mean, they used to have bulletin board systems. I don't know if you remember that, where people they set up their own servers in their homes, you know. And,
right.
And we used to go in on just DOS and read files and stuff. But you're an old hand at this, so you've been looking at the internet for a while, have you not?
Well, like you, I have. Yes, I have. And, but, you know, really more recently, I've been very skeptical about information. And in fact, I basically won't read or download anything unless it comes from people that I know personally or have interacted with over a long period of time and have come to believe and trust who they are and what their analyses are.
Right. I have malware, on my computers, and they caught this ransomware. They got us a real fix on that real quick. So I was protected to a degree on that ransom. But, you know, I mean, the exploitation that's taking place, it's just unimaginable, is it not?
Oh, yeah, I think it is, and it's very frightening.
We used to get those deals from Nigeria, those hustles, you know, about, you know, and then, of course, we had what we used to do way back, you know, years ago was send them the list that their name showed up on. You know what I mean? Of con artists, you know? And then I just got tired of sending back the message, you know? I just, of course, you ignore them after a while, change your email. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's hustlers everywhere, and even on the Internet, right?
No, exactly. Exactly.
But, you know, what I really support what you're doing. I've heard you on several interviews, and you're hitting on some really very, very important, like, nuclear. Stephen Starr out of Missouri, he spoke. Helen and I were talking a year and 4 or 5 months after Fukushima. And I suggested, let's have a conference. Well, she's the one who went out and did it, and I didn't. You know what I mean? I just couldn't participate at that time. But a year after her conference in 2013, I had two conferences in 2014 on Fukushima. See, that's why I considered it to be so important. But, you know, I couldn't get a crowd of 50 people out, you know?
Well, you're right. I mean, there's a wall there. Preventing people like you and me from getting, you know, really important critical information out to people. You know, the industry, for example, have completely ignored my work, where at the same time, this particular film has been seen over 28,000 times already on YouTube and by hundreds of people already here, where I've been on tour, you know, twice now going across the United States. And, you know, sometimes there'll be 8 or 9 people there. Sometimes there'll be 40 or 50. In Dallas last week, there were close to 100.
Oh, that's great. That's good.
Well, it is, but I'm just reinforcing what you were saying. It's really difficult to break through that wall of propaganda or Americans are disillusioned and, I'd say even brainwashed, or they even seem to be, lobotomized, where they just can't and won't, accept this kind of material, which is really critical and vital.
Right. We ran into the Japanese government lying about Fukushima and the American government doing the same. To cover it up, the danger of it.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous for them to admit, I think.
Right, absolutely. And I have friends in Japan who have told me that Tokyo has extremely high levels of radioactivity, and they're not telling the people about it.
Well, Gunnarsson went over there and got samples in a park that were where children were playing that had been contaminated from Fukushima. In Tokyo.
Yeah, right.
Now Tokyo and Yokohama comprise the largest, area of populated people living together. I think it's 35 million, if I'm not mistaken.
You could be very well right.
Well, I've checked this out, so I can say with confidence that is the largest number of people living in a continuous area. You know what I mean? Anywhere else in the world, that's the largest population. So if something happened in Fukushima, it could wipe out a good portion of Tokyo. That's a problem.
Right, exactly. And Japan is continuing to run their, I don't know how many nuclear plants they have, but they're planning on building more.
Right, and the Tokyo is only 120 miles south-southeast of Fukushima. So it's
right.
Pretty close by, you know. Now, Gunnarsson went over there, and even Helen had a speaking tour over there. And she, attracted large crowds, but the government enacted a national security law that you can be jailed for talking about Fukushima and inciting, discord and stuff.
Yeah.
Isn't that good, huh?
Yeah, that's awful. Yeah.
So
anyway, the governments, our government, Japanese government, the South Korean government, most of the governments in the world are already compromised and are owned by the same global elite forces that have taken over our government. We're not the only one. They've taken over most of Western governments and Asian governments as well.
What kind of people, good point, what kind of people show up at your screening? Are there all kinds of different, makes and models, so to speak, that show up, different kinds of people, personalities? What would you say?
Well, unfortunately, the people that show up are all part of the choir.
Okay.
They don't need any convincing.
I got you.
On a few occasions, there have been others from the community who are disbelieving, refusing to believe, but it's been rare. One fellow on this tour said, it's hard to disagree with the facts that you present in your film, but if you dislike it so much here, why don't you move?
Really? Well, that's always a good closing comment, isn't it? On a conversation,
Yeah, and I said to this guy, well, that's exactly why I'm not moving, and that's why I do what I do, because I'm going to fight this with the last breath that I have.
Well, you've done, how many films have you done now, Regis?
Well, I have over 250 videos on YouTube, but I've only done two feature documentaries. The first one was The Ghost of Jeju, J-E-J-U.
Okay.
And now this one, 30 Seconds to Midnight, are the only feature documentaries I've done.
Okay. And this 30 Seconds to Midnight is an hour and 38 minutes or so. That's a full featured movie,
Yeah, an hour and 32 minutes, right.
32 minutes. Okay. But it's considered a full feature movie, on that basis, I know, lengthwise.
That's correct. It's a feature documentary.
Right. Feature documentary. And is it going to be eligible for next year's Academy Awards or anything or not? Or this year's, excuse me. You think?
No. George, with The Ghost of Jeju, I entered it into 20 different film festivals.
Okay.
Very big ones, national ones.
Yeah.
And was only accepted by one.
Really?
The Peace on Earth Film Festival in Chicago.
Really?
And it won a major award. And the rest of them, if they even bother to answer me, will say, well, it's not a good fit for our audience.
Really?
So they're so controversial and, exposing the fallacy and the evil American foreign policy that the mainstream will not touch it. I've not been able to get a distributor. And that's why I have to travel around the country where groups of veterans for peace, Catholic workers, Pax Christi, Quakers, peace and justice groups. These are the groups that invite me to come and screen the film. And without them, my work wouldn't get out and around the world. But by the way, people can see this film, 30 Seconds to Midnight, on my YouTube channel.
Okay.
All they have to do is go to YouTube, and in the YouTube search bar, just type in my name, Regis, R-E-G-I-S, Tremblay, T-R-E-M-B-L-A-Y, and my YouTube channel will come up with 250 videos there, and if 30 Seconds to Midnight doesn't come up as the first one on my channel, all they have to do is search a little bit, and they'll find it there. But it's there, and it's up there for free, and 28,000 people have seen it already.
Oh, my gosh. You also have a site, by a Regis Tremblay site, too, don't you, .com?
Well, I do. And people can acquire a copy of the film.
Okay.
From my website, which is Regis Tremblay, one word, .com. And up in the menu bar, there's a tab that says Purchase Film. And they can either purchase it with a credit card, or they have an option to order it and send a check.
Right.
And even when I'm on the road, when I get orders, Every few days I'll mail out the copies to fulfill those orders.
Oh, that's good. What do you have planned for the future? Do you have anything that you're working on now that you can talk about or not?
Well, I'm not working on it, but right now, because I'm going to be spending the rest of this year and early next year traveling around the country and through Europe, all the way from the UK to Russia.
Okay, because you're going to get a good response in Europe. I can guarantee you that.
Well, I'm getting invitations already from England, Germany, the Scandinavian countries, Sweden, Finland, Norway, and Russia. And the Russians already are working on a translation of the film into Russian. So I think the next film, and I do think that there will be a next feature film, will be a continuation to document the effects of U.S. militarism, war, and empire in other parts of the world that I haven't visited.
Okay.
For example, Central and South America would be an area that I'd be interested in documenting.
Okay. Stephen Kinzer has written a book, The True Flag, and he documents in that the imperialism of the United States since about 1900, 1898 forward. And it might be a good resource for you. I don't know. Okay?
I just jotted down his name, and I'll check that out, George.
Yeah, check that out. He and I are pretty good friends. I really like him. He was at times head of the Bosnia-Herzegovina, well, actually Istanbul desk, and I think he was in Tel Aviv or something. But anyway, what kind of closing comments? We've got about 2 minutes left. Would you have this evening? We have all those takeoffs up on the site already, most of those you just talked about, okay?
Well, thank you. You know, I was just in Austin visiting my daughter, and I wasn't successful in getting screening there. I had The Ghost of Jeju screen twice in Austin, and I'll be coming back through Texas again maybe towards the end of this year. I've got invitations from San Antonio, and I'd love to come back to Austin and screen the film there because, you know, Austin's a pretty progressive place, and it's a large city, and so I'd like to come back there. But my closing remarks would be this, George. I want to compliment you and others like you who have been doing programs like this to allow people with different opinions and different analysis from the mainstream propaganda and the mainstream media giving us a voice. And I think that's extremely important, and I want to thank you and congratulate you for doing that and wish you continued success in the future. And the final thing is, people really, I hope, have to open their eyes, and I think there is an increased awareness that's happening here and around the world, but we're running out of time. And if we as a people, as a species, don't do something to reject and resist these powerful forces that have all life on the planet on the brink of extinction, we're finished as a species. So thank you very much for having me on the show. I really do appreciate it and wish you much luck in the future.
Well, Regis Tremblay, thank you very much for your interview and wish you all the luck in the future.
Great. Thank you, and I'll be listening for you.
Okay. Thank you. Good night.